mothers.
And others.
Somewhere in the music industry, between sex, drugs and rock and roll and the Wiggles, is the rest of us. Music Mothers and Others is an audio parents group about popular music. A chance to discuss how parenting fits or doesn't into music industry life. During the series, we'll talk to people from across the industry. Artists, promoters, techs, broadcasters, writers, academics, teachers, anyone who has a gig in industry, whatever that means. Your hosts are Liz.
Hello.
And Shelley. Hi, that's me. And we are industry veterans, academics and parents, as well as members of the broader village.
Our guest today is Chris Carey, our first international guest and certainly an internationally renowned member of the global creative industries community. As the founder of the Fast Forward Music Industry event, it's a festival for industry, if you don't mind me saying, that came to London, Amsterdam and Sydney, as well as Media Insight Consulting, Chris continues to be at the forefront of changes of the global music industries. With a background in record companies and live music, he's also a mentor at Abbey Road, head of marketing at comms at TicketSwap. Thanks for literally staying up to talk to us all the way from Amsterdam. It's so nice to have you, Chris.
My pleasure. Nice to see you guys. I'm very jealous of the weather where you are.
You should be. It's spectacular.
But don't be jealous of the time, though. It's early, so don't be jealous of that.
It's early. Now, Chris, we've introduced you here in Liz's lovely introduction within the context of your achievements and your organisations, things that you're involved with. But how do you see yourself more broadly in the industry, away from job titles? What do you sort of see your place?
Interesting question. I mean, for me, if I look at where I started, it was always trying to lift the industry up, usually doing something with numbers. My first role was at PRS for Music, so the equivalent of APRA, working as an economist. And much of what we were doing, so myself and Will Page, who was my boss at the time, was publishing papers that helped the industry think more accurately about itself. So whether that was how does average revenue per user impact a licensing model? How does the kind of long tail theory play out in a music context? Does it work? Should you invest in niche? Or actually, are the hits going to get bigger? I think history's shown which one was true. And then also actually adding up the industry in the UK for the first time. How much is records worth? How much is publishing? How much is live? And when you take out the double counting between them, how big is the industry itself? So I think if I look beyond the titles, it's always been trying to make us as an industry a bit sharper, a bit smarter, and to kind of lift us up together. Like, never snobby with that. Never preaching, but just equipping us to be more effective together.
Yeah, and in a way, what you've described just sounds like it's more interested in the professionalization of industry too, because, I mean, once upon a time, music industry was just sort of seen as this casual, lazy art form, you know, that didn't really have any sort of scientific models or any kind of modeling, really. It was like, but that what you've described there, the economics of it, I guess, treats it as it's a professional realm.
Professionalization almost sounds like gentrification. It almost sounds like you're cleaning up the messy bit, and actually that's not what we're doing at all.
It's still messy,
it's,
right?
It's as it deserves to be. It stays creative. The music industry does what the music industry does, and I don't think you would want to knock off those rough edges. I think the innovation and the pressure that exists, the challenge that evokes creativity, shouldn't be sanitized. But then it was just more, less about professionalizing and more putting into words and numbers what was already happening and empowering more of that to happen by having it more cleanly understood.
While you're talking about empowerment and, you know, understanding and everything, Chris, if you don't mind, I'm going to be a bit self-indulgent here and talk about when we met, which was Fast Forward in Sydney. And Fast Forward, I'd called a festival for industry, which I really think that it is. Is that how you'd describe it?
I mean, if I look at how it started, so this is a conference aimed at 130, 150 people. It's not aimed necessarily at the CEOs of the big companies. There's plenty of events for them. This is more about getting a group of people together who can get to know each other and over the coming years grow the industry together.
No, well, totally. And this is the thing. When it came to my uni, to UTS, and it was just after I'd had Sammy, and I was still on maternity leave, and I had so this little baby strapped to me, I thought, nobody's going to want a baby here.
It's too hard.
But also, nobody's going to want a baby here. Nobody's going to care. What am I doing? And I remember getting to the registration desk, and you, who we'd never met, and I didn't realise was the dude in charge at the time, comes over and goes, oh, my goodness, is that a baby? Oh, my goodness, where does that come from? Where does that, you know, welcomeness and ability to kind of say everybody should be part of this, particularly people you know, who've got kids. Where does that come from for you?
Well, I think I blame my mum for a lot of good things. And so mum always helped me see other people's perspectives. I'd get home from school, I'd be angry, I'd be shouting about something, and she'd be saying, yeah, but what if they saw it like this? And it always helped me to see the other side. I didn't always appreciate it at the time, but it therefore always made me very aware of others. Jump forward a little while. When I was 14, my youngest brother was born. So I've watched what it is to have a baby around a family. But I know what it is to see a family of four, all of whom can hold a baby. Grandma is across the road and still it is chaos. At which point, if someone turns up on their own with a baby and they got in a car or on the bus, I appreciate that's not going to have been straightforward. Like, it's not a given. And from that point, I think I also appreciated that it was probably quite daunting to walk in. You're the only one with a baby. So you are the only one by default. At which point, I didn't want you to feel like you were on the outside. That and Sammy was pretty cute. I wanted to come and say hi.
It doesn't hurt that I do have pretty beautiful kids. It's the only saving grace, really. I guess what it does, or it shows to me, is that you're creating events where people feel that they can have a go. You know what I mean? And word gets around, because the following year, I wasn't the only one with a baby. There were a couple, yeah. I remember seeing.
That is brilliant. And I think that inclusiveness, again, just trying to see everyone else's perspective, just helped me see what was good for them. But also knowing that kind of watching mum on her own, or watching mum when it's just me there with Dan when he was little, was blooming hard work.
It's interesting too, I guess, from a business point of view, because, I mean, first of all, it was, if I had to pick just one conference that year or one event to give my patronage to, I'm going to pick the one that I know is different. Can you see those types of accommodations being made elsewhere now, or have you still...
I feel like you should be phenomenally welcome with a screaming baby anywhere you go.
Thank you. I'm just saying it.
Yep. I mean, that's...
Love it.
Yep, that's very kind.
Sometimes I'm not even welcome, like, at the local shop. If I'm at the shop and someone raises an eyebrow if I've got a screaming baby.
But if we're serious about sorting out gender pay gaps, can we please make it okay for everyone to be everywhere? For me, it's self-evident, and maybe it isn't. But if you have to take a year out of your career, you end up a year behind everything. Why on earth could you not pop into a conference with a little one that facilitates you keeping up with your peers? Why not facilitate that?
Yeah, no, it's great. It's really great. And do you see that, I mean, in the rest of your professional role now, because Shelley asked you to take your hats off, but put them back on, tell them us all about them. Do you see that as part of your professional role in the various things you do, is being as inclusive as possible? And it not doesn't just have to be about families, although it can be. How do you approach your professional life in terms of that inclusiveness?
I think I just try to be sensitive. So one of my least favourite meetings at a record label, who I won't name, a lady presented, I was the external consultant, I was sat there, three guys in the room, she's presented, they looked at me and asked the questions. And I sat there very silently looking at her. And there was an awkward moment of silence, and what I will do is sit there in longer silence until you realise it's awkward and you realise you should have asked your question in a different direction. And those little things, I hope, make a little difference. Sometimes I'm more proactive with the conferences, I'm very deliberate about the conference lineup, make sure there's a good balance of inclusivity, really in its broadest sense. And at times we will give tickets to people who we know can't afford to come, because that's another element of barriers to entry for people.
While you're doing all of that and you're including people, and you mentioned your little brother too, is he still working with you now? Do you mind me asking?
I don't mind at all. No, so he's actually working at the Oval. So I appreciate in Australia everything's an Oval. I'm in the cricket ground in South London, where you might have seen England beat Australia and draw with Australia and beat Australia again.
I didn't see anything. I don't know what you're talking about.
So that's what Dan does. So he works on the pitch there. So that's a full-time role. And now, because the COVID situation, he's working on a golf course for a little bit. But I think he would be very good at the family business if he did want to come in. He's got that same... he sees everyone in the room and he can make people feel comfortable. I think the hospitality thing is definitely a family thing.
Well, speaking of family... sounds like you had an interesting family growing up, and Liz and I are keen to hear about the music memories that you've got of your childhood. Maybe a particular song that resonated with you, or a theme song on the TV, or a track that your mum played.
You're going to get all my terrible, embarrassing secrets if we're not careful. I was very late to music, so most of the songs I knew had four chords and a capo. Same four chords, just keep moving the capo. And for me, I would say I didn't find more adventurous music until I was 19 or so and left home. So I remember mum and dad learning to play keyboard at home. I picked up a guitar when I was 16, but played the same four chords and moved the same capo up and down. And it got more interesting for me at about probably 18, 19, when I suddenly realised there was more to life than four chords. Jumping forward, I guess the first album I picked up was The Ataris. Love those guys and appreciate them very much. Then went through an emo phase we shouldn't talk about. And then got better. So most of my good music memories are since I've worked in the industry.
Wow.
So that was the start of a journey. Then started working in music, ended up at what EMI is Global Insight Director. Went to a few gigs with them, which was a little higher standard than I was used to. And then what Global Insight Director at Universal as well. Saw a couple of things.
Wow.
So that was a good elevation.
That explains a lot though too, that different, if you've come from no background in the music industry really at all, maybe that's why you stand out so much, you know, because you haven't come across what the norms are of the industry, which are, you know, these are the people we let in, these are the people we don't, you know, those types of things. You don't have any of those expectations.
Well, I think more than that, I think I'm probably naturally an outsider, that I never knew the cool band. I never knew which the cool venues were. I found stuff late, but having never felt like I was ever going to be on the cutting edge, I can kind of meet people where they're at either way.
You're not willing to give us anything, are you? You're not willing to make yourself uncool.
I'm playing this very coy. I'll embarrass myself with this one.
Okay.
So you asked kind of what would I do if I was in an industry conversation and people are mentioning bands. Mm. I would make sure I remembered who they were, make sure I went and listened later. But every third band you mention, I go, oh yeah, I've heard of them, but haven't heard the music yet. Every third one, I promise you. You can't blag all three.
That's a good trick.
But by the third one, they're taking pity on you. Even if they don't believe you, they're glad you've said something. So every third one, if you catch me doing it now in real life, that's my secret. Now you know.
Oh, dear. Oh, that's great. That's great. I do love that. You've got to be careful, though, because you're a bit vulnerable then. People could kind of sneak in a little bit of, I don't know. I mean, well, these days they might sneak in a bit of Harry Styles or BTS or something like that, but you might agree to something that you really don't want to agree to.
I mean, at least I know who the Wiggles are. It's a strong start. I'll make sure I get that one right.
Good man. Well, how can you not? Really, how can you not?
Well, and the guy who interviewed me for my first music job used to manage the Wiggles.
Really?
Oh, there we go. That's fun fact. Right.
There you go. Did you know that at the time?
I did not know that at the time. I learned later who the Wiggles were.
I imagine he probably doesn't lead with that. If he's hiring somebody to do the numbers.
There was artwork on the wall. So
really?
It was known, it was appreciated.
Oh my goodness. Do you mind me, can you tell me more about that? What was that job that he was hiring you for?
This was economist at PRS for Music.
And that's the dude that used to manage the Wiggles. That's where you go from Kids Music Empire. You go all the way there.
Yeah, and in a very senior role there.
My goodness.
So we had a chief economist. And then the other gentleman was interviewing me as well.
They do have a lot of hot potato money. That makes sense.
Hi, this is Coco from the Pogo Go Show, and you're listening to Music, Mothers and Others.
Do you see yourself as part of shaping the next generation of music fans? And that could be, you know, as the awesome brother or the cool uncle or just somebody in the village or you know, in industry professionally. Do you see yourself as having that role?
It's an interesting question. I'm not. Let's do the easy bit. I don't see myself as doing that for fans. I think fans are almost the artist's job, in a way. That there's that connection with someone you're never going to meet comes through the music above all else. And then you've got a manager who ends up bringing the strategy to bring that music to as many people. You've got booking agents and promoters who put that band in front of people and build that connection. You've got the publishers that sit behind and help with the songwriting. You've got the label who gets it onto Spotify, into ears. You've got Spotify, Apple, Deezer that sit between. I feel like the fans are pretty well looked after. The bit I'd like to do is make sure that those working in music are as empowered as possible to help artists have the best careers they can have and have the best music reach those fans in the best way for them. You talk about generations, and generations are interesting. You also introduced yourselves as industry veterans, which I thought was interesting. Because there's a bit of an age thing that goes on in the industry. And for me, I don't want to be the person bringing through the next generation. I want to be the person who empowers everyone where they are right now to be the best they can be and to stand tall and give it their best. If I were to choose my role, and it's not for me to choose my role, but if I got a choice, I think that'd be it.
Yeah, wow. Okay. So are you saying to stop people leaving, like keeping them in at all stages?
I mean, I think we lose a lot of talent if we don't guard the people who have been around a long time. But I was meaning more actually for the 19-year-old with the best idea in the world to speak up in a meeting, and for someone who might be 55, 60 to not feel like they can't get hold of that and say, yes, that's the best idea I've heard. Sure. I want them both in the meeting. I want them both to be loud.
Wow.
And everyone in between.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea. It's a hard gig for an industry that, you know, on the outside seems to be so obsessed with a certain age group and a certain, you know, time of life.
Yeah, and I wonder actually whether the streaming demographic changes that. I wonder whether people listen to music longer. Mm. And I haven't thought this through, so we'll see where this thought goes. But if the people who listen to music can do so for longer, and instead of now listening to old records that they've heard, they've bought once and will never pay for again, actually, does your music audience broaden? And therefore, does your music professional need to broaden too in order to better understand the whole addressable market for music rather than just the new cutting-edge thing that's coming out now, especially in a world where roughly 75% of listening is catalogue on streaming services? Do we need a broader base? And do we need more diversity, more variety within the sector in order to serve fans more effectively? Haven't thought it all the way through, but it feels like it's probably not a bad idea.
I'm going to jump in because I know a little bit about the Japanese market, and that's a really interesting case study if you've ever looked into Asia. And I swear I won't talk about this very long, but streaming services are only a relatively new thing in there because there's such a huge tradition of buying albums, buying, you know, CDs or even cassette tapes. There's still a cassette tape market, you know, perhaps like in India as well. But even in Japan, the history of having like video stores, same works for music too. So you can go in with your library card and borrow music and take it home, and you're still, it's a different kind of model, isn't it? But yeah, that's a market being, as some data suggests, the second largest industry in the world, second to America.
Well, wildly different, very vinyl heavy. They will spend big money on vinyl. But also the fragmentation in rights ownership is what slowed the streaming services down. So you've got a lot of labels you have to do deals with to get close to market coverage. Yeah. Japan was also the first market to see double-digit decline in physical and digital revenue in the same year. Hi, I'm Chris Carey, and you're listening to Music Mothers and Others.
Our last sort of question, which is kind of a fun one, is really a bit about listening and a bit about musical tastes. And we first wanted to ask you if you had any kids in your orbit, as in, you know, babysitting, or you chat with the neighbour's kids, or someone in your family who's got kids and you are the uncle or something like that. And if so, what are you and the kids listening to together? We're really interested to see what do adults listen to with kids. And it doesn't have to be kids' music or kids' songs or, you know, something that's aimed towards children. It can be anything. It can be the radio, or it can be a top 40 hit or something from your childhood.
Well, unfortunately, I moved to Amsterdam in January. There's this nasty virus going around, so I've been pretty much stuck in my house for the best part of 9 months now, and have not actually made any friendships with people with kids. I haven't made many friends at all, let's be honest. But I mean, it's fine, but it's a difficult time to meet new people. That said, if I were hanging out with Dan, who's what, 22 now, not quite kids, but he's kind of the kid brother, I'd basically make him listen to whatever I was listening to, and try and help him see my side, and then we do the same in reverse. He's a big fan of Hilltop Hoods, so I found out about them through him, which was cool. He also likes Jeremy Loops, which was new to me. And then I remembered a friend manages Jeremy. I'm like, oh, I do know that name from somewhere. So that was a good show to take little brother to. But no, as far as really little people, I don't have any in my orbit at the moment. Hopefully that will change at some point.
And I love that you still, he's still your little brother. That doesn't change, does it?
I hope he loves it.
Well, you're the big brother. He doesn't get a choice in that. You still are in charge, right? That's how we do it.
I mean, he's pretty strong nowadays. I think it could be an interesting contest.
What are you actually listening to before we wrap up, actually? Have you got any hot bands or artists that...
Well, I don't know how well Bears Den do in Australia, managed by an Aussie lad, Rowan Brand, who used to look after Boy and Bear. But Bears Den are phenomenal. And they recently had an album taken over by a composer who then just put arrangements around it. So an album called Fragments, a guy called Paul Frith. Absolutely beautiful for my money. So if I could only leave one band with you, Bears Den would be the one.
Before you go, can you just tell us, you told us some more new music. Can you tell us about your current ventures?
Yeah, absolutely. So taking them in order. So fast forward, hopefully we'll come back to Australia soon. Would love to be with you guys now. We were lined up for April. It couldn't happen. April this year will probably be challenging. We'll see how things go. Always close to heart and mind. Would happily come back and see you guys as soon as possible. In terms of other things that are going on, head of international marketing at TicketSwap, working on kind of expanding internationally. Resale platform with an ethical cap, so you can't sell for more than 20% of what you paid. And we think that, particularly as fans look for flexibility, so many postponed shows, we're going to have a backlog. People might not want to go to 3 shows a week. They're going to need something to do with that ticket, and we think we can help fulfill that role. For a rare moment within Europe, borders are mattering again. So having had the single common area where you could just travel easily, now we're having trouble with friends visiting from Berlin or bands going to Germany from the Netherlands, say. And so things are harder to plan for going forward. And we think we can hopefully bring a bit of liquidity to the market, a bit of flexibility. And that's where we are as a company. And it's certainly something we're keen to drive. In the meantime, there are not a lot of tickets being swapped at the moment. And so to keep ourselves busy and to kind of do our little bit for the industry best we can, we started a campaign called Local Legends that runs in 15 European markets. And essentially, we're a toolkit for crowdfunding. So we've come up with some assets, you've got some visual branding, but most importantly, you've got a campaign that says you're not on your own in this. So for a venue who might have been concerned about the only one asking for help, you're not on your own. You're one of many venues across Europe that need a hand, and we're here with you trying to make it easy for you. We'll help you set up the page. GoFundMe, who we're partnered with, have been great on that. And we're working hard to make it painless in a year that's been incredibly painful. The whole essence is local people supporting local venues. They bring jobs, they bring character, they bring life, they bring a place to be together. And as we appreciate that community, we want to give them a chance to give back to a venue. And we're just trying to make that as easy as possible. We looked at exploring things in Australia. It was on our target list, but the view was taken that venues were fairly well looked after in most places. And that if we were going to do it, do a very Australia specific campaign, but probably look at a wider audience than just venues, particularly for self-employed artists who may have fallen through the cracks. And so you may hear from me again on that one, depending on how things go. Yeah. And the one other thing we've skipped over, so with Media Insight Consulting, I've also done the recent economic analysis in the UK on the impact of the value of live music, firstly, so one paper, and then the impact of COVID on different parts of the value chain: artists, booking agents, promoters, venues themselves, tech, and the ones who get forgotten, the guys who supply the speakers, supply the lights. Because those guys run a debt business where you borrow money and you make more money by hiring this stuff out. And they've now had to hire extra warehouses, additional cost, to store stuff that is accumulating debt, and these assets have become liabilities. There's a lot to be said for looking after the infrastructure in the value chain. And partly why we looked at venues, we felt if they closed, they wouldn't come back. And so we felt that was where one urgent fix was needed as well. That's kind of what's going on with me.
That's the end of another episode of Music Mothers and Others. Thank you so much to our guest, Chris Carey, speaking to us all the way from Amsterdam. Music Mothers and Others is a show written and produced by Liz Dufresne and Shelley Brunt. We're broadcast on Sydney's 2SER on 107.3 FM, and we are also a podcast. Find our episodes on all your usual services, such as Apple and Spotify, or our website, musicmothersandothers.com. We'd love you to leave a review. It would make it easier for other people to find us. Feel like getting in touch? Want to know who our next guests are? Visit us on Facebook and Instagram and leave us a message. See you next time.